A new future of electronic warfare is coming to the Navy, but budget pressure may stunt the growth of that future. Rear Admiral Terry McKnight, U.S. Navy retired, is former commander of Expeditionary Strike Group 2 and former commandant of Naval District Washington. He's also former deputy commander of Joint Forces Headquarters in the National Capital Region. He writes for the U.S. Naval Institute under the title U.S. Navy Entering New Future of Electronic Warfare. He says the time is ripe for a successor to the ANSLQ-32 Electronic Warfare Suite. I asked him to tell me about the Slick 32 and why its replacement is overdue.
It was probably designed and built for the threats of the Cold War. And as we've changed our dynamic of warfare the last decade or so, the Surface Navy basically took what we call as a holiday on electronic warfare. And to move to the threats that we're going to see in the future, they've come up with a system which we call the CWIP system. And basically, that's going to be able to counter the threats that we anticipate we will see out in the future. And from what we've heard right now, the system's out there being tested, and the results have just been outstanding.
You write, the anti-ship cruise missile threat's growing, and we can't afford to lose our advantage to counter these multidimensional threats. What advantage did the Slick 32 give us, and how do you want that advantage to be perpetuated, sir?
Well, the Slick 32 basically, you know, during the Cold War, we looked out there, we could see out at distances where we could, you know, detect, Soviet backfire bombers and cruise missiles and things like that. Well, today's threat is a little bit different. We're in closer, we're into the littoral, so we have to be able to react to those threats, you know, instantaneously. We just can't wait for it to come over the horizon and be able to, you know, detect it at long ranges. So we have to be able to pick up threats quickly, more accurately, and of course at greater lengths, because the speeds of missiles have picked up and the threats are much more dynamic than they were during the Cold War.
You write about two differences in the seascape in your piece, sir. One of them is the fact that at that time we had only one prime enemy. It was the Soviet Union, you write. You also write, when I deployed to the Arabian Sea in the early 1980s, it was almost impossible to think that we would deploy a carrier strike group in the Persian Gulf. What's changed to make that possible today, something that you would have not thought of being possible in the 1980s?
Well, one thing that changed dramatically is the threat that we went into. We had to fight a war, in the Persian Gulf. So we went in there, and we really actually didn't know what we were going to get into. I mean, how could we possibly, you know, put several carrier strike groups in there in the depth of the water? Because all these ships were designed for deep blue ocean, where the carriers got, you know, ample room to maneuver and everything. So we went into an environment in the Persian Gulf in the 80s, and basically we've been there ever since. We changed our tactics, we learned how to operate, and now the threats are up close and personal. I mean, they're in really short distances rather than, you know, far off over the horizon, like I said earlier.
You write, sir, about the CWIP program that you mentioned earlier. What are the essential components of that that make it so necessary and make it, in your view, the right upgrade for the Slick 32?
Well, a couple things in that regard is that it gives us, you know, we update the software, we update the hardware to basically look at, you know, the different threats, you know, the advanced technology that some of our adversaries have. We had to be able to make sure that the hardware and software and architecture of the whole system could counter these threats, and, you know, basically in unclassified, you know, where I can go today to talk about it. So.
You write that it's been a long time since the Navy's fully funded electronic warfare programs. The enemy is starting to catch up with us. How close is it your sense that they are? Because, for example, China's building carriers, but anybody that I talk to says that it will be years and maybe decades before their carriers are as capable as our carriers are. Is this an area in which the gap is closing a lot faster, or is this an area where we still have a substantial lead and you just want us to be able to maintain that lead?
Well, we've got a pretty good lead, but we are seeing signs that that gap is closing a little bit faster than we have in the years past. When you go out there and listen to the OSD people, Secretary Kendall, and everybody's talking about that their fear is the gap is closing a lot faster than we have seen that we anticipated and we've seen in years past. How are they getting this technology? They're getting in our networks. They're, you know, just basically just going out there and, you know, Google.com and basically trying to steal as much as they can off the net. So we've seen the gap, you know, decrease, which is not good. We want to try to make sure that our systems are designed and ready for the future threats, and we keep that superiority that we've had for many years.
Yeah, U.S. Navy retired Rear Admiral Terry McKnight writing for the U.S. Naval Institute. The title is U.S. Navy Entering New Future of Electronic Warfare. Secretary Kendall's remarks and the remarks of others talking about the technology lead that we maintain but is at risk of closing, as you mentioned a moment ago, sir, is something that's not just on the mind of him and others at the Pentagon. There are people in the think tank community that are talking about it. There are people in the vendor community that are talking about it. So it is certainly something that people are aware of. Where are the places in all across the landscape here, not just within OSD or within even just the Pentagon, but where are the places where you think some work could be done to help build that technological lead, not just in electronic warfare, but more broadly, build that back up to where it should be for someone such as yourself to be confident to go out into the field or into the sea to lead men and women into combat?
Well, that's a great question, and I think if you look back, you know, about 30 or 40 years ago, a lot of the technology that was developed, you know, you can debate where it came, whether it's, composite materials for jet fighters or for, you know, the Internet or whoever, you know, invented things, but a lot of the technology that was developed was in our labs, the military labs, the services labs, in conjunction with, you know, with colleges. You know, we had a lot of grants and things like that, but over the past few years, we've seen a lot of those funds decrease, whether it's, you know, it's sequestration, budget cuts, and everything like that. So the technology is just, you know, where we need it, whether it's in microwave, RF technology, those type of technologies that we're going to see threats in the future. That's where, you know, we need to concentrate and continue funding the labs and, you know, and some of the universities that have done great work for us in the past to make sure that these young kids that are out there looking at threats and looking at technology are up to speed, It's a great thing to have a mobile phone that'll fit in our jacket pocket, but we also need to make sure that the military has the technology that keeps us far ahead of where all our adversaries will be for years to come.
Is there a risk, Admiral McKnight, that we could focus so much on technology that we forget that some of the very simple, some of the tools that our adversaries are using are very simple, almost primitive tools and techniques, and we wind up being overprepared for a fight and not ready to compete on some of the most basic forms of technology?
Right. I mean, we've learned that lesson many times in the last decade in some of the wars that we've had in the Middle East. I mean, most of our casualties that we saw from our soldiers, sailors, and airmen, Marines, you know, from IEDs that were just simple devices where, you know, they used a garage door opener. And so we tried to counter those threats with massive spending, whether it's, you know, large Humvees or just some technology that, you know, that we try to, spend the whole bank on things, and sometimes we still can't overcome it. So we need to, you know, to take a look at what they're developing, how we can counter those threats and just meet them face to face.
The new future of electronic warfare, how will we be able to look back, in your view, say a decade or 15 years from now, and know that we've been successful and that we've maintained that leadership gap, that advantage that we've had up until now throughout the period of time that we'll go through in the future, sir?
Well, any electronic warfare system, the key to it is it wants to be able to see the enemy long before he can detect us. So any system we design and build, if we can be able to keep the threat at a distance so we can react to that threat and make sure we can counter that threat in timely so we don't take any casualties, that's the key to our success in any electronic warfare system. We have to be able to reach out and not allow him to see us before before he can see before we can see him.